Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola, and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe period Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Or check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.
Welcome to episode 196 of the Rust Quill Gaming Podcast. I'm your host and GM, Alex Newell, and with me today I have...
Ben Meredith.
Brid Monroe.
Lydia Nicholas.
And Helen Gould.
And who are you playing?
Zolf Smith.
Hamid Salah Harun Al-Tahan.
Saul Sidebottom.
And Azu.
And how are you feeling?
Yeah.
Antsy. Antsy for action.
Ooh, yeah.
So I thought what we could do is have 2 to 3 sessions of extended introspection.
Oh, good.
Per character.
Great.
And then we can return to the campaign later.
Yep.
Or
love it.
Yeah.
Or
a few more will saves, and based on that, bit of meditation, you know?
Today's recording will just be 45 minutes of in-character meditation.
I quit.
That's actually Zolf's line is right there.
I'm just imagining Zolf very annoyed, lying there with cucumber slices on his eyes and eventually just storming off.
The animation is it looks so relaxing, and then as it zooms in you realize that he's actually, his teeth are grinding.
Yeah. There's an eye twitching behind the cucumber. So in terms of what we are going to be picking up from, at the end of the last episode, you obviously got shown
the device.
And the device is effectively not hideous, but an inelegant amalgam of science in terms of botany, biology, chemistry, physics. It's a big pile of science.
Mm. Pretty sure it combines technical elements from Mr. Sealing, the Simulacrum, and Shoeen just to really tie together everything we've met.
Yeah. That is correct. Like I said, it's a big pile of science. Because that's how science works. And we all know that a scientist knows all science. Because it's one field.
And each science is stackable. Can make it, like, it's like Lego. Science is like Lego, right? And each discipline is like a different colour. And that's how science works. Bye,
Helen. As everyone knows, the arts are actually connects.
Yeah. Oh, I hate it. I hate it so much. I never wanted to be on Team Connect ever. Anyway, one of the last things that was happening is people, Sel, Hamid, and Skrark, wanted to have a look over basically plans, the device, etc., to see whether it seems on the level, seeing whether it's the kind of thing that in the real world, if someone saw a pile of science, would go, that's actually junk. And see whether there's actually some stuff going on there. So I'd like to do that first. Can I please get a technical roll from the three of you of the field of your choice? Because it's all of them. I'd advise not an ability, but you could, and I'll find a way to make it work.
Alchemy, I guess?
Yeah, alchemy's fine. Alchemy's fine. For the sake of it as well, Zolf and Azu, if you have anything that you want to bring to that as well, feel free. But last session it was pretty much I'm not a science person.
Zolf is unconcerned. It's just like, great, we have a plan, let's do it.
Yeah.
Azu is happy to let the people who are good at it figure out if it's good or not. And
thanks. I was going to resort to it's quite a noble looking brain, so I'm glad you've saved me that.
33.
For knowledge alchemy, okay.
Yep.
Hamid got a natural 20 on Arcana.
Yep.
So that's a total of 37.
Ooh! Crikey.
Skrark only managed 18 on knowledge engineering.
In which case then, Skrark very quickly comes to the conclusion going, I'm not sure what it does, but I know it's going to work, by which I mean the bits are connecting right. Nothing is mechanically wrong with it, but that's like... Yeah. Base level, you know, that isn't physically broken. In terms then of the higher rolls, both Sel and Hamid come to the conclusion that, yeah, as far as you can tell, and you're getting pretty good at this by virtue of exposure, This should in principle do what it is expected to do. It could in fact probably be hardwire from here, but you would need to leave it where it is, connect it to something about a few miles away at least, and walk through the middle of London carrying cables and hope so no one notices it. And even then, it'd be a bit of a push.
Yeah.
And you can see how that kill switch, whatever it is that was meant to be, would interact with it, though you aren't necessarily able to discern the exact specifics of the kill switch to just make one yourself. There's a couple of elements there that are variable. But both of you do come and notice there is an error in the design.
Ooh.
It is a minor error. Effectively, there's a mechanism built in there to protect the brain that's in the jar, the Babbage brain, from feedback, meaning it should, in principle, the machine should work. It should do what is stated. Mm-hmm. However, it looks like it's been built in such a way that hopefully the Babbage brain would survive, mm-hmm. that the mechanism that's being used to make the Babbage brain survive this process isn't going to work. You probably could fix it, but it will function in its role, but it's going to cost Babbage's brain currently.
It's going to take control of the network successfully.
Yes.
But the feedback will kill the brain.
And would that mean that nothing is there to take over, which could then...
Oh, no. You think that it'd be okay for long enough to do what it needs to do, but it's going to... Basically, Babbage will burn out.
I thought that the point was to have Babbage replace the mind at the centre... So if Babbage pops...
And then relinquish control.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, they just need him to survive for long enough to be like, do what you want, bye.
Yeah. Right. But according to the current design, he will go, do what you want, bye. Oh, that was a big bye, pop.
Oh, okay, so that's...
Whereas there is a way to modify it so that Babbage isn't lost in the process, should you wish.
I mean, but he would still be a brain in a vat.
That is correct.
Right, that's an interesting... But that opens up, is that really an error, or is that... Yeah. Tesla not wanting to confront the idea.
It's also a good question.
Leaving his friend as a brain in a vat.
The other issue is that if Babbage survives and lives long enough and was somehow taken control of elsewise...
By Hades. Mm.
Would he be able to re-extend control into the network?
Ooh.
It would take more work than what's currently there.
Okay, so that's not a risk necessarily. Once he has successfully withdrawn the tendrils, he can't just push them back in.
No, it doesn't really work like that.
Okay.
Hamid and Sel meet eyes, having both realised the same implication.
Yeah. Hamid, shall we...
Quick sidebar,
quick,
maybe?
Quick sidebar. I don't want to talk about these formulas and things in a way that I know.
Yeah.
I know it's...
I think it looks like it's...
I don't like to talk about things that bore or confuse people in front of them at length. So
I think it's
going to
work. That's the headline. Yep. It's good yep. news.
There is a very, very delicate bing bong. But an actual bell dinging bing bong, like a doorbell.
Why doesn't everyone else go and get that? And then we can discuss. Or should we go into...
Ada's just like, oh, yes, yeah, of course. And hurries off. Tesla doesn't seem to have noticed.
Okay, so Cell's just going to go into the other, into the staircase thing area. Or the alternate lab. I'm trying to... Remembering what it was and sort of hope Hamid follows.
The workshop as opposed to the computer lab.
Yeah. So, that brain isn't going to survive, but...
No.
Do you think that's intentional? The way it's put together, it looks like that it's trying to protect the brain, but it's not. But I don't know if digging into... Like, motivation... Human science is not my strongest science. I have many strong sciences I could talk through, but not the motivations that might lead someone to not... I don't know, is Babbage in pain there? Is that something that they might want to... I don't want to unpick... There's a lot of complicated...
Can we communicate with Babbage? I feel like it should be his decision, I guess.
That, That sounds, yeah, I mean, maybe he loves being a brain in the vat. I don't want to judge. It could be great. In fact, I've considered it a few times. Depends what you.
I love that this came up in the Showing Institute, almost exactly that same phrasing.
That's because sell daydreams consistently. You know, like, I mean, maybe I you can control the octopuses from here.
Necessarily bother good. Tesla with more of this, but maybe if we talk to Ada about it, she might...
That is, see, this is what you understand people. And well, yes, we should ask them.
Okay.
Ada would probably know, and she's friends with both of them, and she may know if it's appropriate to talk to Babbage. Like, maybe Babbage is perfectly chatty.
Would people be okay, then, with a minor time jump? Mm-hmm. We're talking, like, 15 minutes tops.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.
Ada comes back down the stairs mid-conversation with a wild-haired and familiar friend.
Oh, Professor!
Oh!
It's so good to see you! How are you?
Hey! I'm good, yeah! In terms of the look of Einstein, you remember the post sort of Rome jump? He'd gone very kind of Mad Max to the point where it was almost affectation, maybe even actual affectation.
Sure.
He seems to have reined back in a little bit from there. You can actually see some torso underneath ammo belts that don't have any ammunition in that kind of thing. He is wearing an eye patch, not over one eye, just here.
On a forehead, right? Yep.
Just above the eye, as if it were to be flipped down. But he doesn't seem the worst for wear. Maybe a little bit thinner, maybe a little bit more city miles on him. But he seems all right. Oh, hey, I didn't know you'd be here. The communication doesn't work with the anti-magic field and the wardings. And you look good. I thought you were
too,
dead.
You
well,
too.
Not all of you.
It's really nice to see you, Professor.
I don't know who you are, and I'm glad I'm not dead.
I don't know who you are either. Hello.
Sel, this is Professor Einstein, who helped us previously a lot. Professor, this is my friend Sel, pronouns they, them.
Oh, hi, Sel.
They're
cool.
Alchemical expert, and they've been a wonderful friend and have done so much good while working with us over the last...
I really like your goggles.
Yeah, I'm liking this whole getup. Do you make the belts yourself? They look extremely practical.
I mostly use them to carry snacks.
Ah, yes.
Unfortunately, my thing doesn't really need much in the way of components, maybe a little bit. So mostly it's like, you see, this is my beans pouch, and then over here we have my sweets pouch. That one's running a little low.
Aww.
I have two water pouches, because you can never drink too much water. It's very important
for you. Oh, no, you've got to stay hydrated. You've absolutely got to stay hydrated.
Ada's just kind of lost in this conversation, watching the back and forth. I'm going to, if I may, accelerate it a little further, because there will be nothing beyond, we both like talking a lot, right?
it was on a knife edge there of Sel having the moment of jealousy of, oh, look, there's a wild-haired, like, science chatterer.
What I am going to do, though, is, with everyone's permission, jump ahead a little bit too. I got a briefing to give you. I'm just going to lay it out for you as a GM. I got a mission briefing I need to give you all. So unless anyone objects, I'm going to push you into that meeting room.
That's cool.
Sure. I'm happy to be pushed.
In which case, then, I'm going to jump time ahead. I'll say that, again, this is for the sake of expediency, there's been some catch-up. Einstein is basically happy to have said what he's been doing, but it's mostly did a bunch of stuff with the Harlequins, didn't really pan out. Then got stuck helping a lot of people evacuate Cairo, and now I've been sort of chasing down some stuff for this lot. He only became aware of this lot after being contacted by Barrett. Ooh. He was not aware of it until comparatively recently. And his read seems to be similar to yours, which is, you know, that's a big pile of science, huh? But, you know, it's not his field, because he doesn't really have one. He's just good at teleporting.
I would like to say that for flavour, Azu has definitely given him, like, the biggest hug you can imagine. And he's quite a small man, if I remember correctly. So just...
True, but he does take a little bit of time to show you that he's been working on his guns. And, you know...
So many compliments on the old man's science guns.
There's definitely, like, a muscle in there. Between both arms, there's maybe one.
Hammond will get in on the hug action, absolutely.
Aww.
So I am going to say that there is a warm hubbub of conversation as Wild comes and sits in. There's an actual briefing room.
Oh,
there
wow.
is a conference table with fancy, slightly threadbare chairs that are slightly mismatched, but there's even a projector screen with an old-styly, like, magic lantern-style projector.
A literally magic lantern, I assume.
You know what? Yeah, there's a magic lantern. In terms of who's in the room, Wild, all of yourselves, Einstein, Skrark, Summit Njöll has eventually slumped in, seems fine with all of you, but is still clearly real peeved at being in a certain person's house, basically. And then last but not least, Ada comes in. Augusta was not especially interested and was probably even a little bit disparaging, but you know, that's how she rolls. So Ada sets up, goes over to the magic lantern. Thanks everyone for coming here. I know it's all a bit rushed, but when is it not? I'd ask if you can keep questions till the end, because otherwise I'll lose my thread and that'd be rubbish. Okay. She pulls a lever and then a slide comes into place, which is an exterior of the Svalbardian vault.
Ah, what does that look like?
It's not actually especially impressive, and I would say that it's obviously Svalbardian, and if anyone doesn't know, like, it's immediately just said by the people who do. Enough people in this room would recognise it. And it is, at first glance, quite unassuming. I want you to imagine a sort of, like, an ice shelf or, like, an ice pack or whatever, and then you have a small-ish worked stone front that then seems to lead down into the sort of side of the mountain or glacier. It's hard to tell in the image. It does seem to have sort of vaulted doors or whatever, but beyond that, it seems like a very small entrance to a city. You could maybe get two Azos walking abreast. That said, there is what seems to be a path leading in towards that main entrance that goes out of shot, maybe like a road or something. So, with the thanks of Einstein. I'm Einstein. Yes, hello. That's me. We've been scouting out effectively places, and we're fairly certain we've found the kill switch that we need to cannibalize for the device. And well, we believe it's in Svalbard.
Oh, is this the one that Grizzop commissioned the cult of Hephaestus to build?
Ada's immediately now like,
hang on, and it's supposed to be questions at the end. Ada, do you want to continue?
You did say, sorry.
Yeah. Ada starts sort of shuffling her notes a moment and comes back. Yes, questions at the end, yes. Cool, yes. So, she clunks it, goes forward a slide, clunks it back, and then clunks it forward again. Okay, so that was the entrance, and then obviously within you start seeing a massive plan. It seems to be a very, very old document that's been, like magically illusioned or photographed or something similar. It's an incomplete one. The actual interior is very large because, it's a city. It has an unassuming front, but there is a whole city under there with a number of entrances, most of which seem to have collapsed or boarded. Next slide. Me, yes, clunk. So, we have a series of sort of like documents are effectively put on that seem to be like diplomatic missives and so on. We managed to sort of find out through some contacts and with Barrett's help that the population of Svalbard sort of dropped out of contact. Obviously, once the infection was going on, an envoy was actually sent to the city. And the envoy said that it was sort of abandoned, and that there wasn't infection there. There weren't blue vein people there. There was no one there, and it was locked up. But they kind of said they got the impression that it might be a little bit dead inside. As far as we're able to tell, we think that they may have had a seed in the vault, similar to in London and so on, and we think it may have triggered, but wrongly somehow.
Yeah, we found them. Next slide.
You've already been into Svalbard?
No, we've been
right.
Next,
let's stop interrupting.
Okay, right. Yes, next slide.
This whole time, Cell has been like, bouncing up and down like the kid in a classroom that knows the answer, but not saying anything. So, like, just the angriest, like, the most resentful they've ever looked at Zolf. Like, you spoke up and I was trying so hard not to. But, like, it continues.
I didn't ask a question.
True.
I can make all the statements I want.
Zell was also going to answer. That's the, like, oh, I know the answer. I know the answer to this. And they didn't answer. So proud of themselves.
So, next slide. Yes, backwards, forwards, back, forwards. Yes, clunk. It then is showing what is effectively some correspondence, which appears to have, like, symbology from the Hephaestus lot. So we received a missive from the cult of Hephaestus, who, when things started going bad, they sort of implied that they might have a solution that they were working on in Svalbard, which is obviously why we sent the envoy. Well, I didn't send, they sent the envoy because it was important, but then because we couldn't get in, but now we can get in. And then she just points at Einstein. We think, based on what they've said, that the device may have interfered with the seed when it triggered or something, which meant it triggered differently. But we don't really have the data. But we're pretty certain that the device itself is in the city, most likely, pretty much the most secure place you can get. So maybe like a vault or a council chamber or a treasury or something like that. Maybe a lab, I don't know. But, you know, somewhere that's going to be secure. We have managed, with Einstein's help again. Thank you, Einstein. I'm Einstein! Yes, hello! We've managed to isolate certain areas as being, you know, inaccessible and things like that. But he's not actually able to go very far in by virtue of... it's warded! Yeah! Turns out they don't like people teleporting into their bedrooms. I mean, I've seen it before. It's kind of like this place.
Einstein,
it's not insulting.
Einstein, come on, let's Ada, I'm very interested in what you have to say, and so are all the rest of us, and we'll be quiet now.
Oh, so anyway, yeah, we've generated what we think is a plan of Einstein can get you past the main entrance and into sort of the it's like a foyer. And because the warding, there's a blank spot in the warding, and then from there, if you could go in and fetch the device from the secure pit and then bring it back out, Einstein could then bring you here, and then we could plug it into the main device. Any questions?
No, sounds good.
I'm up for that. Yes.
I agree with the plan. I just to ask my previous question. Is this the cult of Hephaestus who Grizzop commissioned the kill switch from? Is that the link? Is this where they went with it?
Wild sort of asks Ada to go back a couple of slides and look at the documentation from the Hephaestus lot. Inconclusive, but my guess would be probably. The Hephaestus lot are secretive at the best of times. It kind of goes with their territory a little bit.
I mean, does it matter? Point is, they got one. We should go get it.
At the very least, they thought they had one, and even if it didn't work, that's still... what else are we going to do?
Yeah, if we don't have it, we don't have it. So let's get the one that might be it.
I've always wanted to go to Svalbard.
Wild turns to Ada. Did you have anything that you could maybe give us to equip up a bit? Because let's be honest, I don't think I'm the only person at the table here who assumes that the second that we're going to go in there, there's going to be nothing but death and monsters the whole way down, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
I was hoping that also there would be like interest in mechanical devices.
I mean,
some of
presumably.
Which may be traps, but yes, death and monsters too.
Well, I'm going to aim for, you know, less death than previously.
Ada kind of looks awkwardly around, then goes, "I think we do have an armory." Tesla's really about preparation. None of us actually know how to use the stuff. You'd be happy to welcome it. Augusta looks after a lot of it, but yeah, I think help yourself. If that'll help, do you think it'd help?
Yes, never hurts to be prepared.
In that case, from our perspective, we're good to go. I mean, I'm guessing you might want to rest, maybe stock up or something. But
one question: what kind of monsters might we expect?
Oh, good question. So, yes, right. One second. Mm-hmm. I believe that you're already familiar with our friends, the Root Guardians, that are in London.
Oh, the clicky friends.
Yeah, yes. They make the strange noises. We believe that those have been derived from the plant itself, so it might stand to reason that even if that plant is different by virtue of whatever that mechanism is, I would expect those to turn up again, potentially. Beyond that, we believe that the plants have a sort of extra-planar quality. I'm currently working under a theory that they're all the same plant. They're just sort of different faces in the same plane.
Makes sense.
So it could just be that this face is damaged, so I would expect probably planar entities or such. Thankfully, it should have been mostly protected by the heavy wardings that are all over the city. But again, that might result in it coming out stranger rather than not at all. Beyond that, I know that they... I mean, you know, it's a very large subterranean city. No doubt if it's been left unguarded and unattended, there might be some other more naturally occurring beasties that could have turned up.
Grand. So it sounds like, clicky friends, we are trying to be quiet. So in this equipment, let's be looking for quiety stuff.
There's one last thing before we go, which, well, Einstein, you're the one who goes, yeah, last point. This is news to Ada, so, you know, I may have kind of poked around a little bit further than I should have, just to, you know, see. I just wanted to see, you know. I got as far as sort of the big main entrance, far side of the foyer, and there's two things, last things you should know. There were bodies. They weren't living bodies. They were dead bodies that seemed connected via roots, and they kind of keep an eye out still. Like if they see you, then other things on the roots seem to notice. So I managed to get in a little bit, and it's they're not everywhere, but we're gonna have to be a bit careful. Because, you know, I think it might be a little Gestalt-y. I don't know. Maybe like a 6 out of 10. No, maybe like a 3 out of 10 Gestalt-y. You know, right.
That scans. Okay. Fine. Right. Yeah. Well, good to know. Well, bad to know.
They can't move. Because I am not quick. And they did not chase me. But I heard other things moving, so then I left.
Right.
Like a big mushroom network with eyes. Lovely.
Yeah.
Okay. Good to.
Oh, that's horrible. Thank you. That is both apt and terrifying.
Yes, it's not good, is it? But I assumed that we'd be trying not to be seen by anything, so yes.
Speaking of, let's have a look at this equipment.
Yes.
And before we head into the armory, then, why don't we take a break? And I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has 2 limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEA Malibu.com code MOM.
And welcome back. So, because we don't have Sasha in the party, I'm not necessarily going to RP going through every single, you know, blade in detail, because it's just it doesn't have quite the same charm to it. What I would say is it's really well stocked. It's grossly overstocked, in fact. Augusta shows you around, and it becomes very clear very quickly that most of it is either looted, or some of it may have even been stolen prior, and maybe Ada and Tesla were naive enough to assume that she was just really good at fetching things. In terms of what's in there, though, straight out the gate, if there's basically any basic protection items, you know, amulets of natural armor, that kind of thing, they got loads.
But basically nothing that costs more than 1,000 or 2,000 gold.
That's the kind of thing we're looking at. They also have cloaks of elvenkind, easily enough for everyone. Cat burglar's boots, if anyone's interested in them.
What's the bonus on them?
+2 competence bonus on acrobatics, climb, and stealth. And once per day as an immediate action, you can re-roll any one failed check of acrobatics, climb, and stealth. It also has a hidden pocket to hide Masterwork Thieves' tools.
So, in some ways, they would fit Skrark, except that I assume they would adapt to kobold's feet. But
they're magic, so yes.
It might be better to give them to Azu to bolster a weakness rather than to enhance a strength.
I think you might misunderstand me. There isn't one set of these boots. There's like 8, maybe 9.
Well then.
So anyone who doesn't already have boots can have them.
It's not so much that they fell off the back of a lorry than that an entire freighter tipped itself over and Augusta helped herself.
Tipped itself over? I
Correct.
See. I see how it is.
There are also a number of goggles of the night.
Oh, I'd like those. Please.
Not to be confused with night goggles. They're completely different. These are goggles of the night.
I also want to highlight that, like, we are being careful about slots and everything, but, like, I've been talking about Cell having goggles of intelligence, but they are actually reskinned. It's a kind of headband, whatever the thing is. So
yes.
Technically, they can have both of these, but, like, skinning-wise, definitely going for, like, full opticians level, like multiple things flopping down over the
I'm imagining the ones from like that Hellboy film. I think it was Guillermo del Toro with the lenses.
Like we are going full steampunk goggle design here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very, very good.
I'm afraid that is it, apart from any mundane weapon you could possibly want.
So no cloaks of resistance.
Oh, no, I would count that as the like the basic resistant items I was talking about.
Okay, cool.
So when you're talking about the basic items, I always think of those as the set of Cloak of Resistance, Amulet of Natural Armor, and Ring of Protection. Those are like the three bread and butter.
Yeah, those are the ones I'm talking about.
Items. I naturally already spend lots of money on those.
See this, mate. This is your standard run of the mill plus one Ring of Protection here. That'll deal with most of your bumps and scrapes. So Augusta's fine to equip all of you, but is very keen to say that if you happen to come across anything particularly shiny on your travels, do bring it back. You know, because it's our armory.
Are there any nice-looking axes?
Nothing comparable to what you're wielding.
Azu looks a bit smug about that.
There is a very overwrought ceremonial axe, but you know that that's not actually a weapon. It's more like maybe a trophy for a competition or something.
It's for putting on a wall and pointing
at. And Augusta doesn't necessarily seem to know her mundane weapons that well.
Yeah.
Everyone knows if you put an axe on the wall in the first act, by the third act, you have to get it off the wall to use it in one fight before it breaks dramatically.
The man's not wrong.
I'll just pick up an amulet of natural armor +1, because that's kind of the only slot.
Yeah, you're pretty... You have all of the numbers, don't you? Your numbers are good. You have good numbers currently.
Is this a cloak of resistance +1? 500
yes.
GP? Oh, okay.
It's an armory, not a Christmas present,
I want
I'm afraid.
A Christmas tree.
With that in mind, does anyone have anything further? Otherwise, I'm happy to basically, if you want to have a night's rest first and then go fresh-faced, bushy-eyed, bushy-tailed, bushy-eyed? Yes, bushy-eyed in the morning, that's fine, but it's up to you.
Never hurts to have full spell slots starting a dungeon crawl.
Agreed.
So with that in mind then, are we happy to skip to the next morning, everyone fresh-faced and ready to teleport away?
Yep.
Yeah.
In which case then, Einstein is carrying a like hiker staff and he's wearing boots. He looks like he's about to lead maybe like a scouts expedition or something, and he's certainly talking with you all like that. Okay, so we are going to have to leave outside of this building before I can then teleport because of the warnings. When we arrive, it is going to be dark. Do not worry. It is fine. I have already scouted it out, okay? Now, could everybody please pick a buddy and make sure you stick with your buddy until the journey is complete, okay?
Yes.
Good. Right. Einstein just starts heading out the way you came in through that big elaborate airlock door, and you're going to have to go one at a time and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
Do we have an awkward moment of Hammond and Zolf being nearer each other and so accidentally becoming each other's buddies and like then... I mean, just for all the school playground AUs, we need to know.
No, I'll explicitly need Azu because if something goes wrong with my legs, I need someone who can pick me up.
Yes, that
fair.
Makes sense.
Him there
yes,
with the
fair
practical.
Point. I would say as well, for clarity, Skrark is coming, as is Summit Njal, as is Wild.
Mm-hmm.
In which case then, heading outside, everyone joining hands, Einstein's seemed a little bit less jovial once he's outside in you know, vague danger and sort of checking around and so on. Okay, right, so, last chance. Otherwise, are we good to go?
I think we all nod quietly.
Okay. All together then. 3, 2, 1, alley-oop! And you teleport. And it's the first legitimate teleport you've had in a long time of gameplay.
Yeah.
At no point do your feet accidentally come out of your head. At no point do you feel like you're being stretched through infinity and forced to eat 1,000 stars. Huh. You just turn up at your location.
Yay.
And with that, I would like to reveal to you and to the audience, we are now going to be doing some stuff via Roll20,
Ooh.
A online system that can be both free and subscription paid, because it allows me to do big, elaborate battle maps. With that in mind...
Can I be the one that tells the audience that what we've got loaded up that we can see is
well, yes.
a big smiley face just saying, be afraid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the reason for this is
so
very
we
simple.
Be afraid?
It's because you should be afraid, yes. We are going to be using Roll20 as we explore Svalbard. So if everyone could please get into Roll20 if you're not already. Everyone there?
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Looking at the terrifying face.
I am going to put you into the new room. Do not freak out if all you see is black. And last but not least, I am doing things to do with Fog of War, meaning you can't see the entire map all in one go. So if that breaks, let me know. This should now put you all into a new thing.
Yeah.
So what you should be able to see is a big open area of Earth.
Yeah.
And then what looks like a bridge leading out over a chasm.
Yeah.
And you should also see two large sort of semicircles on either side.
Oh, okay. Mm.
You appear in what feels like an open-topped underground cavern. There is a large amount of unworked stone and earth around you, and you are stood upon a large, elaborate stone pavement with sort of interlacing designs upon it. Looking up, again, this is first impressions, the cavern is open to the sky above. It looks like it might be a naturally occurring light well or something similar that has been taken advantage of. You are at one end of a bridge leading over an enormous chasm, the bottom of which you cannot see.
Mm.
In terms of the scale of the bridge, it is big, very big, far larger than that main entrance you were told about. For a scale, about 5, 10, 15, 20, 20, 30, 35 feet wide. There you go. And it is 200-ish feet long over the chasm. Highly impressively worked stone. It is leading to an enormous, imposing, fortress-esque edifice that is built into the very rock and ice. It has large amounts of arrow slits, buttresses, things like that. This is a defensive structure built to defend from things on the outside getting in, less than a prison to stop things getting out, if you see what I mean. On either side of the main bridge, you can see there are two balconies which are sort of a little bit higher than the bridge, maybe 10 feet or so, that look out upon the bridge and the chasm, which seem to be covered in medium-size-ish plants. Could everyone please give me a quick perception check?
Yes.
24.
17.
31.
11 and... 18.
Okay. I'll give extra detail for Cell. For everyone else, using a sensible amount of deduction here, it looks like the plants seem to have sprung from the fallen, maybe? And they are marking where someone has fallen and been integrated into the system.
Oh, no.
There is also, Cell, for your benefit, on the left-handmost balcony. These are all massive balconies, by the way. Don't think little apartment. You're talking like a huge, almost like you could put market stalls on there, big square almost.
It's about 75 foot across.
There appears to be one actively shambling, dwarven-sized creature. However, it does not look to be a dwarf, let's put it that way. Thus concludes your initial description.
Cell excitedly, while flipping the goggles of the night on and off as the additional lenses to their already pretty cool goggles describes all of this.
So Einstein obviously drops people off and goes, okay, so you see these two towers that are either side of us here, the little ones, it overlooks a bridge? This is as far as I can go. Well, that's not true. I can go in because I have, and it's super scary. But I can't teleport any further in than this.
How did you get in?
I walked. Oh. You may not be able to see. The main door up top, you see there is a square. Just beyond that, it's a little dark. The main door is open. There's no portcullis or nothing.
Okay.
Are the plants on those balconies, are those the ones you said were looking?
Yeah. So these are the watchers. They aren't very good. They don't seem particularly bothered by sound, which is interesting. That's like helpful. You have to be quite loud, and they can't see very far. You know, maybe like 10 feet, something like that. The danger isn't that they're going to see you coming. It's more such, you know, you're going to open a door and, oh, there's one. Oh, no. Ah.
Right.
That's what happened to me. I opened a cupboard. There was one. They all see. There we go.
How many of them are there in that first, you know, room? Or is it pretty clear?
If you get into the first hallway, you can't see it from here. The main entrance dead ahead is full of them. Loads and loads. But there's a bunch of side doors. I've tried the left-hand side and I've tried the right-hand side. The right-hand side seems a little clearer,
right.
But there's not much in it, really. All I would say is I think that if you can just get around that first sort of pile of them, you're kind of in. This is the front porch. It's a big front porch. His voice is a little bit echoey around the space.
Well, I can only make myself invisible, or a bat.
I can make us all invisible a limited number of times, obviously, but if there's a real collection of them near the front, then we'll do that to get part at least into the next section.
Now, there is one last thing, which is I can't go back, then come here, then go back again. I kind of have to stay, otherwise I'm going to use up all my teleports. So I got to stay here.
All right.
So yeah. He kind of looks a little bit sheepish and says, mostly I solve my problems by teleporting away till they aren't there anymore, so...
Should some people stay with you?
That's a really good suggestion that I didn't personally make, yes.
Well, the five of us have explored unknown and dangerous areas before, and that's what we're good at. So perhaps Oscar and Summit Niel, you could stay with the two of you together. Would make a formidable team to hold the location.
I think that's sensible. We can hold this area... Summit Niel, with your permission, you're pretty good at, like, at which point Summit Niel's, yes, I can turn into animals. I just mean that, you know, you could kill something with your bare hands.
Oh dear.
Right.
Oscar, is this really the time for jokes?
I'm going to say Cell doesn't respond to that pun, but taps Oscar gently on the shoulder and says, I just think you should know that what you said was actually very offensive in Polar Bear.
Oh wow!
I don't know if that was intentional.
That's genuinely really interesting.
Should we go?
Yeah. Wild turns around. It's on a serious note. I'm going to sustain an illusion over us in probably the left side of this tower, so that if anything comes, they're just going to see an empty tower anyway. So if you come back and you're seeing an empty tower, we might still be here. Okay.
All right.
Do you have a message spell or anything like that that would last long term, so we could keep in contact and know if you actually disappear? Is that a thing?
The thing is that yes, I can, but with all the warnings and stuff that Einstein mentioned, the likelihood of it getting through, the deeper in you are, the more likely you are to be on your own.
that makes sense. And we wouldn't want it to suddenly cut off and think that there was a thing that we need to rush back and help you with. And then it would turn out so that actually you were fine. And that was just a magical...
Yes, so, let's go.
Yep.
Right. In that case, then, good luck. And, you got this. I certainly couldn't think of anyone else in the world who's better suited.
Yeah, you too. Be safe.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Just before Wild leaves, I'll just give him a squeeze on the arm.
Aww. Emotions.
At which point, Wild, Einstein, and Summit Newell all go into the left-hand tower, and then, and this is where Alex really shows off his skills, the illusion of an empty tower is activated, and they disappear. But as a GM, I can still see them in the GM tower, layer. You see. Yeah, because they're onto a different GM plane.
Should we tell him that we were using this for the space game? Or...
yeah.
Or, no, we'll let him enjoy it. It's cool.
I would like to, out of character, quickly establish, like, literally a 30-second conversation between Hammond and Wild to establish three code sentences that he could write in chalk to leave behind if they have to go that mean slightly different things. I'm not clever enough to think of the codes or exactly the three most useful sentences, but that seems like a pretty simple, practical three sentences meaning three different codes.
Ooh, clever.
Since we're basically at the end of the episode, why don't we call it there? You can discuss these off call because we'll need something suitably elaborate and ridiculous. But in that then, I leave you standing on the porch of an incredibly cold, enormous chasm facing a forbidding ice fortress that is manned only by the dead and the doomed.
Ooh, lovely.
Bye.
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 Rusty Quill Gaming is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 international license. Today's episode was directed by Alexander J. Newell and produced by Hannah Preisinger. To subscribe, buy merchandise, or join our Patreon, visit rustyquill.com. Rate and review us online, tweet us at The Rusty Quill, visit us on Facebook, or email us via mail@rustyquill.com. Join our community on the Discord or via Reddit at r/rustyquill. Thanks for listening.
Pick up an amulet of natural armor +1 because that's kind of the only slot.
Yeah, you're pretty. You have all of the numbers, don't you? Your numbers are good. You have good numbers currently.
You know, in the system, there's just some items that you have to take because it make number go up, which is definitely the hallmark of a well-designed system.
Yep, love it.
I love seeing, because you're on the same level of the call, the two extremes. With me sat in the middle where it's like, I do like good numbers, but you can have too many good numbers, and it's just the whole spectrum. I love it.
Wait, I think me and Helen just sat there with complete indifference, like marking the centre of...
I am fully on Ben's side, perhaps even more on Ben's side, because I actively do not understand half of the things that we do.
So by definition then, Lydia, you have to be pro numbers with me and Bryn, otherwise the system
is unbalanced.
I like
it when my numbers are high.
Good. That'll do.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here, the voice of Azu, Enola, and Laverne. Today, I'm here to tell you about Woe Begone, a podcast launched on the RQ Network. Woe Begone is a weekly horror sci-fi audio drama series about the nature of power and the implications of linear time. Woe Begone follows Mike Walters, who discovers a mysterious and violent online game. What begins as an exploration of an alternate reality game with real-life consequences quickly becomes a search for the technology that makes the game possible. Each episode has a unique soundtrack composed by creator and writer Dylan Griggs. Listen to Woe Begone, spelled Woe, period, Begone, wherever you listen to podcasts, or Check out woebegonepod.com for episodes and transcripts. Have fun and see you later.